Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Eric.
How are you?
I'm pretty good, coming in with a lot of energy. Bing, 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 bing. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. I am disappointed, I think is the word.
Not you, Jeff.
It's not all about you.
Well, it is Leo season coming up.
And that's right.
It is all about me, absolutely.
No, it
my
is,
birthday's coming up.
My disappointment is in... And it's funny to say, it's in Chance the Rapper, somebody
that's
I'm not
very funny to
a
say.
Fan of.
Yeah.
Not his music, not his personality, not... I just have no... I don't expend energy on Chance the Rapper or anything.
Mm-hmm.
But I was disappointed to see his... I don't even know how many tweets it was. A whole bunch of tweets essentially endorsing some more Kanye West for President of the United States of America in 2020 and being serious about it. Like, that doesn't make any sense to my head.
It's always crazy to me that anybody in 2020 is endorsing Kanye West, including... I cannot believe that Kanye is endorsing Kanye for 2020. It's... I wonder if people's opinions would be more palatable to me if their music was better.
Wait, hold on.
Yeah.
Like, hold on, wait. If
Kanye was making better music, would I agree with him more? Maybe. Well, I mean,
I don't know, Jeff.
I don't know. His opinions are very out there now. But like, if in, I don't know, 2016, he was making better music.
Really?
I mean, he did go full on board with Trump, so maybe not. But
yeah,
like,
I'm afraid of where this is going. You're saying,
but like, did I agree with him about like, I don't know, leather jogging pants or whatever? Sure. You know, like, do I agree with Chance the Rapper about marriage, I guess, or whatever he talks about? Yeah. I guess it's like, I agree with people with inconsequential things as long as their music is fine.
All right. I'm going to go the other way
mm-hmm.
and say, hey, maybe a person who is kind of uninformed and not educated on policies and doesn't believe in science or fact or...
Right.
These things, maybe we shouldn't take him seriously no matter if his music's good or not.
Yeah.
I mean, care if it slaps or if it bangs or if it exists.
Hold on. You don't care if it slaps or bangs or exists?
No.
I don't know. Maybe I don't agree with you. Maybe you should make better music.
I'm trying, Jeff.
Yeah.
Now is not the time to...
Do you believe in vaccines, yes or no?
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah, I sure do.
Wow.
And especially now. How crazy is that? You read the Forbes article. I read the Forbes article.
I read the Forbes whatever that was.
It was a huge waste of time. There's a problem with Forbes selling their soul, whatever soul they have, to just get some clicks. But that's a whole nother issue.
Of Forbes?
You know, I thought that... I honestly woke up this morning, I swear to God, and I thought, wow, Kanye's not a thing, like a week in.
Mm-hmm.
And then
Chance brought him back.
So I don't know if Chance is trying to be secretary of... something of hats. but what's unfortunate,
by the way, it is crazy that there is sort of like a secretary of hats now, right? That's
he would be the secretary of hats,
yeah, like past two administrations.
Yeah. I didn't get it at first, but now I understand.
Yeah
I don't know. I'm disappointed because I thought that Chance would be, you know, I saw 2 Chainz after Kanye announced, say, damn, I already voted, but I wish I could vote again or something like that.
What?
When Kanye announced. And I was like, maybe that's him being like a good friend and being like, oh, man, I already sent him my vote. Sorry, I totally would have. Friend, send me some beats. Right. But I think he followed it up with like, no, I'm really serious. I wish I could vote for Kanye for president. And guys, if you're listening out there and you support Donald Trump, turn this off, go away, like, don't listen to us anymore. I think that we've been pretty clear about that.
Yeah.
If you are voting for Kanye West for president, turn this off, don't listen to us, don't follow us. Like, I'm sorry. Now is not the time for, you know, people who don't know what they're doing to be in office.
Well,
we've seen that. It is proven. And I'm not about it for another 4 years.
I will say,
no matter if it's Trump or Kanye or fucking, you know,
Britney Spears is running for president.
I don't even know, but I'm saying I wouldn't vote for her, no matter if her shit slaps or bangs or exists.
What is her foreign policy?
I think policy is foreign to her.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that in terms of people support or people rooting for Kanye or Trump, I think that like Biden does need to reach those people. But that being said, like, I think that Biden is also the only choice. I think that there is no other option for keeping things on the rails than Biden.
Right. If you want for this country to exist in a better place, and if you want things like healthcare and free college and so many of the other things that we all fight for every day, you can't just say things like slavery was a choice. Some things, vaccines don't work. I mean, let's keep people who are uninformed and ill-suited to run a country out of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue.
1600 Black Lives Matter Avenue, I think it's now.
Sure. You know what?
Yeah.
Not allowed there either.
Yeah.
Jeff, who's on the podcast today?
On the podcast today is Sheik Looch of
Our
The
friend.
Locks.
That's right.
Also of the Two Jews and Two Black Dudes Review the Movies podcast.
Sheik Looch. You know, we talked about this a couple days ago. We were like, we've had Styles on for a solo episode. A couple solo episodes. We've had Jadakiss on for a couple of solo episodes. And we have not heard the entire story of our friend Sheik Looch. Now is about that time. We had a lot of laughs today. We learned some stuff. He dropped some gems. And it's a great episode as expected. So shout out to Sheik Looch. Locke's project on the way. Two Jews and Two Black Dudes episodes on the way. Also, Jeff, available right now at itsthereal.com/shop.
You can get t-shirts.
Three new t-shirts. Jeff hand drew them. Jeff thought of them. Jeff designed them.
I'm very talented. If people don't know, I just want to put this on the record. I'm very talented. I was voted class artist in my high school.
That is true.
And
it's finally come to fruition.
Yeah, it only took.
Here we are. Jeff, three new t-shirts. One is Stone Cold Sunna, that is Birdman, and Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Together.
One is Michelle Rich Homie Kwan, that is Michelle Kwan and Rich Homie Kwan.
Together.
And then we have Uchi Wally Zerbiak, that is Wally Zerbiak and Nas.
Together. Finally.
itsthereal.com/shop.
People have been asking for these combinations forever, and we made them into t-shirts. They look great. Yep. They're our best looking t-shirts yet.
Yeah.
You can get them at itsthereal.com/shop. You can sign up for our Patreon, patreon.com/itsthereal. Support us over there. And let's get into this episode.
When?
Right now.
Yo, what up? It's Eric, a.k.a. Blowing a Bag, a.k.a. American Beauty.
Yo, what up? It's Jeff, a.k.a. Say With Your Whole Chest, a.k.a. COVID Season.
Yo, what up? It's your boy, Sheik, Lil Silverback Gorilla, a.k.a. The Price is Right King.
Yeah, it's your third favorite podcast. Yeah. Waste time with It's The Real.
What up?
What's
good?
Looch, what's happening?
Everything's great, man. What's happening with
you? Yo, you know what's funny is that we texted you to say, like, hey, do you want to record in the afternoon? And you were like, nah, let's make it early. And I was like, that's so strange. And then I remembered the last time that we spoke to you on the podcast, you were like, yo, I get up early and I go to the supermarket during like the senior citizens hour.
I don't know. I didn't mean to do that. They was looking at me like I fucking was a terrorist in that store. I get up, yeah. I usually get up, you know, during regular time, get my kid ready and whatever. And then, you know, of course, hit the gym. I'm watching The Price is Right as we speak.
Sure.
Shit like that.
Yeah, but the wild thing is that, you know, you're somebody who likes to record, like, until the very late hours. Like, how do you get any sleep during your nights?
Well, at night, I mean, yeah, you're right. I do like to get in. I get in the studio from, like, 7, 8 o'clock on, like, 3, 4 in the morning. And I don't know, man. Believe it or not, I'm up and at them, like, 6, 7 in the morning. So, I don't know. It doesn't even matter.
I choose not to believe this.
That's
you,
crazy.
Yeah, you said, you know, believe it or not, I choose not to.
That's right. Yo, Looch, first of all, how is your family doing? How's your wife doing? Is everyone healthy and safe?
Yeah, everybody's good, man. Thank God. You know, like I told you before, she's a nurse, so she's, like, there every day with it. But she's safe, man. Everybody's safe. My kids is in the house, and, you know, everything's opening up slowly right now, which is cool, which is good. But everything's good.
And this is the most important question. Has D-Block Studios officially opened?
D-Block Studios, I say no. Well, the answer is absolutely not. Not yet. But we have no more building to do. We're strictly doing the paperwork.
So it's now it's like, is everyone comfortable with going into the studio and actually recording?
Yeah, no, well, we didn't put the equipment in yet. Like, we got, like, the TVs on the wall.
Sure.
All the necessary, everything, all the stuff, everything except for recording. Like, we don't got to put no more walls. No. We don't got to do no more walls, no more, like, nothing. It's all done. Everything's done.
It's a recording studio.
Yeah, you just had
it's
no
a
equipment.
It's a recording studio. Now, yeah, we got the real deal right now, and we need the permits from the city.
Okay, all right.
Well, what is the vibe that you're searching for, like, your room?
Oh, come on, man. You know what it is. I got my you would think I'm blood or something, man. My room is all red again. It's red and gray, but new technology, red and gray, from new equipment to new carpet, new gray hardwood floor all in it, and it's dope. It's pretty cool.
That's good.
It's pretty cool. And let me tell you why I do red. Red for me gives me an energy. It's like red is this a strong energy for me when I'm recording. Yeah.
Do you like have like red cars in your life?
No, not at all. No, I had one before. But other than that, like far as I'm talking about being creative, far as like writing my lyrics and all that, and wanting to get busy. I just feel that energy right there.
You just stare into that red paint and you get something
Absolutely.
Back.
You know, I'm telling you, it's the reason why they paint certain psych wards all white or canary yellow. Like it's colors to bring your mood down. You know that, right?
Yeah, of course.
Well, or up. I mean, like, you know, red and yellow make you hungry, which is why McDonald's or Burger King, that's their colors.
Sure.
Get the fuck out of here.
That's a fact. That's true.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Sheik, I've never lied to you, and I would not start by talking about the McDonald's coloring.
Yo, Looch, let's go back to the very, very beginning. Where are you originally from?
Yonkers, New York.
Yonkers, New York. Now, listen. Yeah,
and where is that?
Yonkers, New York is not too far from Mount Vernon. It's in Westchester.
Not too far from Mariner. Not too far from Pelham.
Yeah, not too far from the Bronx, not too far from all that kind of shit.
15 minutes from everything.
Yeah, but Yonkers that you grew up in was not the Yonkers that we might see today on television. Like the whole gentrified water, you know, side.
No, it's changed.
Developments.
Changed big time, man.
What was it like
big
growing
time.
Up in Yonkers when you were a child?
Our Yonkers, I mean, with the, like, Westchester alone, put it like this, our Yonkers was so hooded out before, and like the kind of like the rich areas was more Central Avenue,
yep,
going towards Scarsdale and all that. Now that changed, it's like the hood is more towards Central Avenue, towards that way, and now the waterfront is the good property now. I guess they figured it out, like, man, we got these motherfuckers, they got the waterfront, the train station, everything down there, we gotta switch this shit up.
Yeah.
So now it's like everything has been rebuilt, and it looks beautiful down there.
Is that something when you're growing up in it that you realize you're living in the hood, or is this like it's just your environment, you don't know anything else?
When you're young, it's just your environment. You don't know anything else. As you get older, you realize, nah, we in the hood. It's 100% in the hood, and like certain things that take place, and from the elevator situation to the crime to all that, you realize that later as you get older. When you're young, you think that's just what it is. That's how I was born and raised.
What was the elevator situation?
No, I mean, I've seen some elevators not working. You have to hike them steps. But also, I seen one dude got on it, tried to get on the elevator, and the elevator was missing.
Oh, shit. Oh, fuck.
Yeah, exactly. I remember, like, him dropping, and he caught it. And he caught on to the elevator as he fell.
What?
Right? To the side, right? And then the elevator came down on his hands. But when you look, all you can see is his hands. My grandmother was in the hallway crying like crazy, screaming like, trying to help him. You see both his hands and shit.
Holy shit. And you're a kid seeing this.
Yeah, young, man. Right outside the laundry, man. Whitney Young.
So who grew up around you? Did you have a lot of cousins or relatives or anything?
Yeah. Well, it's just me and my mom growing up, far as like my household. Single parent. My mom, rest in peace, passed from cancer and all that. But long story short, like just me and my mom and but I had a lot of she got like six sisters and you know, all that kind of shit. But as far as this, it's just me and my mom.
So what does that female energy bring to, you know, a Sheik Looch? Because there's a lot of people who, like, you know, they see you on stage. They're like, oh, that huge presence. Obviously, they know you from your lyrics. And they think about, like, what, you know, a red wall can give you and all that. But when they talk about, like, you know, who you really are at your core, talk about Absolutely. Your mom raising you.
I mean, the best. So who would know, like, her only child would grow up to be famous? Like, you know what I mean? What's the chances of that?
Yeah.
Like, her only child blew the fuck up. But strong lady, far as like went on and got her master's degree in social work, always been getting a lot of money and big investments. I mean, that's why I have all these houses now. She, I mean, back then she was like, give me this money to put towards this house. So I give it to her. Give it to 30, 40, 50 here, this and that, this and that. I was always a partner, but she was running everything.
Wow.
You know what I mean? This all kind of stuff. Man, I remember when she got the Taco Bell and all kind of other stuff. And I was like, man, what are you doing? You know, but strong lady. And just, that's why I said, you know, a woman could be the strongest person in your crew. You have, you know, yeah, it's crazy.
So was she working like long hours? Were you by yourself?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Long hours. I'm home dolo by myself. You know what I mean? And yeah. And then that's when I have all my crew over and all that shit. Dancing in the fucking living room and break dancing and shit, kisses, vows, and all them come over and he's fucking up her carpet. you know, crazy.
Well, yeah. So, okay. So a lot of people have seen Jada doing like break dancing at the studio.
Yeah, you can do like windmills and shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. I seen that shit. I walked in when he was doing that shit in the old studio.
But that was a real thing when you guys were growing up too.
Absolutely. We was on like, I was more like a pop lock and shit. I was like doing that shit, like break dancing and all that. But, yeah, that was real. I think every young black or Spanish person, and maybe even white, was breaking and pop locking back then. And if they didn't, they wanted to.
Well, is this the truth that Kay Rosewood is actually a really good dancer?
No, Kay could dance. Wood could dance, man. He a little calm down now, you know what I'm saying, with the cigarettes and shit. You know? Yo, but he could dance. Now. He really got some rhythm. All the dudes got rhythm like crazy, man. Kids could dance. Or everybody got that little Y.O. Yonkin step and shit.
There you go. So when you're growing up, you're obviously, you know, hanging out with your crew. Your mom's working long hours. You're spending time at home, but you're also playing a lot of sports, right?
Yeah. She had no problem putting us on like the, I played for North Yonkers, football, like forever.
Like Pee Wee League?
Pee Wee League all the way up to damn near high school. I tried for high school, but I messed my leg up. My hip got dislocated, so it was over. You know what I mean? But we play sports like forever. And then, when Kissing Them was playing hoop, you know, I'd be down there. I'm in the gym watching, like on the side. It was dope. Or that's how we all stayed connected.
Were you always like the biggest kid in your class?
Nah, I was actually skinny as a motherfucker, man. Maybe tall, but extra skinny. I think the weight came on like later when I got into pull-ups and push-ups and lifting weights and all that, and drinking beer, I think. Drinking beer and you know, and getting ice. I think that's when the weight came. But I was always big boned, but skinny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when you're growing up, you're playing sports, you're hanging out, did you end up getting like a job at 14 years old?
Yeah, nah, I had a job. I worked at Burger King, I worked at Staples, I worked at Saks Fifth Avenue. I worked at it was like a, I think it was a Walmart or I forgot, it's some kind of spot like that. And then Burger King was the one where the whole hood was working there and shit. And we'll come home with all the burgers and the food and all that and give it to the hustlers outside and shit like that. Cutting through Whitney Young and shit. But yeah, that was one because like everybody was working there. When we was young, right? We had to go get working papers. I know you gotta do it now as well, but we had to get working papers from this lady named Miss Kirk. It was over there in Commas and Yonkers and shit. And she'll call the people right then and there and ask you, can you get hired? And it was dope, man. When you got your working papers, that's when you felt independent like a motherfucker.
Yeah.
The whole hood worked at one spot and it was dope, man. You get your check and they take your tags out, you mad as fuck. But then, you know, it's cool.
How did you get to Burger King?
We took the number 25 bus right outside of Whitney Young. Right outside of Whitney Young. Yep, to, I think, yeah, exactly. Yep, 25 bus.
So if you're 14 and
but
you're...
But the school, at the time, they give you bus passes.
Yeah.
They give you bus passes and shit around that time. Yeah, yep. And then, then if you don't got one... Yo, if you don't got one, you them shits used to melt and shit, right? So you get a clear plastic and shit, you get a clear plastic, and the ink will melt on the plastic, right? So all you gotta do is put the same color paper behind it, and now it looks like you just flash it to the bus driver and he let you go. Or like, I'll go to the back and throw my bus pass out the window, just kissing them, and then they grab it and come on. Bus driver didn't really give a fuck. What fucked it up with the bus passes when they start doing the reflector ones, like it changes color, it changes.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
This way. Well, yeah, that did. It's hard to get around that one.
Did you have a fake ID?
Nah.
I mean, you guys were already on by then.
No. Well, we got on after high school, like a little bit, like when high school was ending, like right after. But Burger King, we wasn't. Nah, man, I wasn't. By the time when we got on, we had crack and shit like that around then. But Burger King was like earlier.
Right. You didn't have to go to Miss Kirk to get your papers to go sell crack.
Nah, not at all. Not to bag that shit up. Not at all. Miss Kirk was early. Miss Kirk was like, when you get your working papers, what, 14?
Yeah, 14. Like
yeah. So that was early.
Yeah, so, okay, so at 14 years old, what do you want to be in life? Like, are you like, yo, I'm going to, you know, go in this direction, or were you just like, whatever comes my way?
At 14, I would say it was whatever comes my way. We were rapping. We definitely was rapping and shit, you know, but not as serious, I want to say. We like to think we were serious, but we were rapping, but more like the pressure was on for my parents to go to school.
Yeah.
And try college and shit like that. And all of us went to community college. You know, everybody know the story and shit.
Yeah.
Didn't do too well. We got a couple of credits and shit. But for the most part, it was like, you know, something our parents made us do.
But if you're money. But if, okay, so if you're having that sort of like regular job at Burger King, and then you're also like, you know, selling crack on the side, and and you have like, you know, some ambition in terms of like your music career, how do you choose like one of those three to sort of like be the leader?
I mean, we knew Burger King wasn't gonna go nowhere, it wasn't gonna pop.
Right.
If you was gonna make it, I mean, if the drug game blew up and we happened to get our hands on some big, right? It was petty though when we was trapping.
Yeah.
You know, for the most part, I wouldn't say nobody was, you know, not to discredit anybody, wasn't on no kingpin level or nothing like that. You
right.
know, when you say if you made it the kingpin level, you probably that's that because they on your ass and you might as well go all the way. They're going to be on you. They're watching if you make it to kingdom level. So, you know, that choice will be made if you make it to that level. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Now, musically, you'll know when it pops the way it did for us as well. As far as like, you know, with Mary Blige and the whole nine. And when we really, really and with Puff. And you know, it's a different level than saying, I'm a rapping, I'm getting on. No, we were on, like big time.
So did your mom have any understanding of where you were musically in high school?
Yeah.
Or what you were doing in terms of like the drug game in high school?
Yeah, well, the drug game. She used to see me out there like this, you know, and ask me why am I out here? What are you doing? Like, try to like go in my pockets to see like if I'm doing anything, you know. As time went on, she couldn't really control me too much. Meaning, like, you know, she got to go to work. I'm gonna be out here regardless. I'm getting big, so you can't threaten the belt no more. You know what I mean? Your smack ain't doing nothing to me. You know, back then how they threaten you is I'm gonna take your keys, your house keys, and shit like that. So you can't get in the house. That hurt it more than anything.
Sure.
You know, because you didn't have nowhere to go. Or you just run the street. Yeah. But she knew about our music career well because, like, say we get offered a contract. Like, I remember, like, as it started getting realer, like Eddie F. gave us a contract and tried to sign us. And, like, Chubb Rock and
yeah.
and Dave Hall and all. It's a bunch of people, like, a whole bunch of people that was trying to get involved with us, right? But my mom will pay for them contracts to go get looked over to the lawyers.
Wow.
You got kiss, like, yeah. She'll pay for all that shit. Just, you know, she was making money and just pay for that shit. And then yeah, yep. She knew.
So you were really taking it serious as far as like getting your bars up and like
yeah.
But were you recording anywhere? Were you actually going to anybody's like home studio or anything?
Yeah, it was these dudes named the Mushmen.
That's a great name.
Yo, it's called the Mushmen.
That's a great name.
Earl and Shamel, these dudes out of Mount Vernon, right? And they was working with us early in the game, like, you know, and they rapped themselves. But it just didn't go well. But we was definitely making tracks. Like, regardless, before we blew up, we was the Bomb Squad, we was the Warlocks, and we had the streets on fire. Like, you know, we didn't make it big yet, but it felt like the attention we was getting was real big. So, you know.
Yeah, who of the three of you was the most serious at first?
Kiss was rapping before. Well, I mean, he was rapping before me. I gotta ask Styles, was he spitting before him? I don't really know, but I know he was rapping before me. I remember back then because our parents all lived around the same area, and then our grandparents lived around the same area, and then coincidentally, like my mom moved, Kiss mom moved to the same block, like over to Glenwood. Well, everywhere we was at, we was together like forever. And he was rapping. And I was like, man, that shit is dope. How you do that shit? Like, you know what I'm saying? And he used to go upstairs to Steve's Tune House, Steve Tune, over in Riverdale, go to the top floor, and he'll turn some beats on and Kiss would be spitting. I'm like, yo, that's fire. And I just kept trying to do that shit. And then, you know, shit started going and growing and growing and developing. But I wasn't rapping. Nah.
When you say that like the streets were on fire, like were you guys recording or were you guys just like performing live? Like where do people hear you?
Yeah, we'll make the we'll record on these TDK tapes and shit like that and the Maxwells. You know, I told a story with Styles. Styles stole like fucking 2,000 CDs. I remember he slept over in the store when they closed.
From Odd Job.
From Odd Job, exactly. And took that, and that shit like really that was the ammo right there. Cause we was getting them before we was making these tapes, but like you know, we had the bottom shit, so, you know, we'll get, like, three or four at a time and dub them and sell them. Nah, now we could go to school with fucking 20. We'll go to school and sell them shits for like $5 a tape, but I have like 40 on me every day.
Like in your backpack.
Yeah, thousands of blank tapes to make that move. You know what I mean? We finally got the distribution when Styles did that shit.
And so you just did it hand to hand?
Hand to hand, and people was asking, yo, I need five of these tapes. I need five of these tapes. And we'll dub them and dub them and dub them. Push play on one side and record on the other one, and then push play all the way through. You kind of didn't want to put the fast forward button, Adobe, and whatever that button was, because it messes it up a little bit. You finally play it back. So you like play all of them all the way through. But we'll do like, you know, honestly, I'll go to school with 20 tapes and sell them all every day. So that was like, we was killing it.
Who was the first? What was the first time that like somebody put them in your in a store?
This had to have been around. Far as the, nah, I don't know. I think more of our music was in the stores. More of the mixtape. The mixtape, far as being on a Clue or Ron G or Dua. You get what I'm saying? The actual Bomb Squad or Warlock tape itself, I don't think was actually in the store for sale. It was more hand to hand. I think our music, far as in the stores and Harlem Music Huts and all them places, was more like, because it was on that DJ's project.
Who was the first DJ to reach out?
Damn, it could have been either. I want to say Clue, but then I'd probably leaving out so many people. You know, definitely Ron G and Clue and Doo-Wop and them, because Doo-Wop and them was so dope. They had like we came from a list of people that was killing it with Doo-Wop and an old Bounce Squad and Firehead and Snagglepuss and all them kind of dudes that was rapping with them. So we was like, man, these guys are sick. Probably, I don't know, it had to be them earlier DJs. I don't want to leave anybody out. Word.
Do you remember the first time that someone was like, yo, Sheik Looch is nice?
Yeah. You see, mine's grew as, I got progressively dope as fuck. Like, because Kiss was always spitting that shit. He was dope back then. And then I was coming. It was like, ah, cool. My shit grew all the way up to this day to be, like, insane, like, on the mic. Like, you know what I mean? I had work to do. But the first time was, I don't know, definitely one of them Warlocks and Bomb Squad shits.
And who was the person who, that you would look at as sort of like the North Star? You're like, yo, that's where I want to get to, and that's who I want to be like.
No, well, for me, it would be like the Run DMCs, the Big Daddy Kanes, the Kool G Raps, the Rakims and shit like that. EPMDs as a group, you know what I mean? Onyx was hardcore back then, but it would be those kind of guys, honestly. But DMX was on fire. I wouldn't say I wanted to be like him or none of them kind of guys like that, but they was just dope MCs from around our way, you know?
Well, how did you first hear about DMX?
X from Youngest New York.
Yeah.
Youngest New York, just running around, and X used to battle people. Bill Blass and whole Get Paid staff used to battle, and you know, it was just sick. We had like dope block parties in Yonkers, New York. We had a real dope hip hop scene in Yonkers, man. I'm surprised like a whole bunch more people didn't come out of there. You know what I mean? Because it's a sick hip hop scene. From the block parties to the underground parties to the school 12 parties, it was amazing. Word, it made you want to get into hip hop.
And did you look at X and say like, man, like he's a superstar right from jump?
Absolutely. X was a star back then. Word up, just didn't get his chance yet. I mean, you know, you knew about all the negative shit with him and his dog and you know, robbing people and all that kind of shit. But his lyrics outshined all that shit. I swear to God, like, yo, his tapes was crazy with the stories and the, you know, nigga have he'll have like the whole side of one tape with a bunch of dope ass music. Then, you know, the other side will be Luther Vandross and shit.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's crazy. He taped over like, and them shits were selling crazy.
I think it's interesting because, you know, you look up to a Rakim, you look up to a Run DMC, you look up to an EPMD and everybody else, and they have a certain like way that they dress and carry themselves and rap. And, and X was not like that. And you guys were not necessarily like that. Was there ever a phase where you dressed, you know, like Big Daddy Kane, where you got your hair cut like him, like you wanted to rap like him?
Absolutely wanted to rap like him. Like Rakim and Big Daddy Kane and all them kind of dudes, man. Even Run DMC, I think, you know, when I always tell a story, like when like when it was going on Peter Piper, Pick Pep, when they was coming in and out.
Yep.
We all studied that shit. That's Kissing Styles, all that. They got all that from that in the EPMDs and all that. But as far as dress, Yonkers had their own style, man. I don't know what the fuck what it was, but Yonkers had his own style. Like, you know, a lot of people, when you talk about Yonkers, before we blew the fuck up and Mary and X and everybody, it was like, yo, where the fuck is this place? Like, you know, because it is very, like, besides the inner hood that we know about, it's like a very suburb around it.
Yeah. Well, where,
you know what I mean? So, yeah.
Where did you used to, did you, like, go on vacations? Like, where would you go, like, outside of Yonkers as a kid?
Vacations with the family, me and my mom, not a lot back then, as far as her working and, you know, trying to make ends meet and us doing, but, she got us, you know, probably like the basic Disney World, Florida, shit like that, visit family, you know, other than that, not no real crazy shit, you know, but far as, hanging out, we was everywhere, man. We was recording in Brooklyn and Queens and Funky Slice Studio in Brooklyn, like all kind of places, like putting that work in.
And
this is when we was recording, it was real machines.
Yeah.
And that plays and this and that, like, you know what I mean?
Well, what did Harlem mean to you guys, like, right after, like, high school in into those, like, first semesters of college?
Harlem was dope. Harlem, you know, our big bros, D&Y, you know, were from there and from a couple of other places, but they kept us in Harlem a lot, you know, as far as doing a bunch of shit. Especially in front of the Mart 125th, their dad owned that shit and rented the stores out to everybody inside. So that was like their place to chill at, in front of like the jewelry store over there. And like all the rappers from there, from Mace to Cam and all them dudes, man, they were spitting that shit. And dudes is dope. And this is around the real battle era, like, you know what I mean? Where you going, and it's not necessarily battle how these battle rappers do right now, like hardcore dissing each other and knowing facts and info on motherfuckers. And you know, these battle rappers now, when they say, so if you was over here, to you and I said, I don't, not that. We would just spit rhymes that we had already. You know what I mean? And kind of like conversing with each other.
And whoever was like the hardest would sort of.
Exactly. So that's what Harlem was. Plus the other side of Harlem, like coming from Yonkers, like it was like a way we was going somewhere different. Like, because, you know, let's get a bad air. Let's go hang out somewhere else besides Yonkers. We'll go down there, get the burger spots, Willie Burgers. Willie Burgers, Jimbo's and all these places and just hang out. And Harlem Week and you know. And it was cool. Then you go back home, you felt like you was the shit, like when you go somewhere else.
Did battles ever get like physical afterwards? Were people just like, yo, fuck you, and that turned into something else?
Not really with us. It was a heavy just like give a pound and that was it. More dice games broke out with fights and shit like that than the battles with us back then. I could see the battles nowadays getting like that.
Yeah.
Cause they'd be so like these motherfuckers know info and details on you and about your parents and all, you know what I mean? The battles now is like more intense than it was back then. Like I said, back then it was more lyrics that I had already, I'm spitting, not necessarily geared towards you.
Yeah. Well, how patient were you in that time period? Were you like definitely sure you were going to get signed somewhere, or did you like, you know, need?
I'm going to say yes. I'm going to say hell yeah. Hell yeah, we knew we was going to blow up. Hell yeah, we knew this shit was going to pop. Yep.
Did you feel like it was going to happen like tomorrow, or did you like really like?
No, I didn't know it was going to happen tomorrow at all. You know what I mean? Like, absolute. I didn't even know Mary. I knew she loved our music. I didn't know she was taking it with her on the tours and playing it for people. And she wasn't even playing it for people to get us a deal. She was playing it like, these niggas is dope from Yonkers. You got to hear them. Like, it was like that kind of situation. It wasn't like, you know, so no, we didn't know, like, the next day we was going to blow up in an ass. We didn't even know she gave it to Puff or this and that. We found out later.
Well, how like, did you find out that she even fucked with you? Like, what? And did you have, like, people...
Yeah, she an OG. She from Yonkers, but her younger cousin J-Bop was always with her, and like he'll borrow her car, and she'll give us the MPV and the Cherokee and the Range Rover. She'll give us all them cars, like, yo, y'all go ahead, y'all chill, just don't mess my shit up. You know what I mean? And you know, we'll ride around blasting that shit. So we knew she fucked with us, but we didn't know she was bumping, you know, on the tour bus playing our shit.
Wait, so if she gave you the truck to borrow?
Yeah, she gave J-Bop the truck. Said to ride around and like she'll come pick us up. We all hang tough like every day.
Yeah, but did you have like your specific spots in the car? Like you always got shotgun?
nah, man. You better because you get in where you fit in when you get. You know when it was.
Yeah, but
point.
You were the tallest. Like you should have been in shot. Like
yo,
if they put
Wood was tall. It was a few. It was a few tall dudes. It was Wood long. It was a bunch of tall dudes.
Yo, if they put Sheik in the middle in the back.
Oh, they hate that. They hate that for that day. Like. They don't even play that middle seat with me. I never get middle seats in none of that shit. It's first class, window, exit is never no middle, nothing. Nothing. Word. But my, yo, my dudes hate. I can, if I'm in the middle of on the side of Styles and them, they can't stand it. Yo, move your fucking arm, yo. Fuck.
So you get, so you guys, you know, your tape gets from Mary to Puff. How does Puff show interest in you guys, and do you fuck with him at the very beginning?
Absolutely. Come on now, Puff was Puff. I mean, we only seen what we seen on TV and these magazines and shit like that. Like, you know what I mean? And hearing about him and seeing him come through Mount Vernon and, you know, and doing it crazy and seeing his artists like that. So when we got there, it was literally like Mary set it up. And D&Y was our managers at the time before the Rough Rider shit.
Yeah.
And they took us, and he was sitting behind a desk. I forgot where the fuck we went, somewhere downtown. It wasn't none of the offices that you remember.
Yeah.
And Puff was sitting behind a desk like, yo, what's up, y'all? Give us pounds, regular shit. He's like, yo, let me hear something. We rapped and shit to him. He's like, yo, he's just staring at us. Dope as fuck. He played some of the music that we got, turned it off again. Then he said, let me hear some more shit. Rap like and shit. We rapped. He was like, yo, he said, welcome to the family. I said, get the fuck out. Like, he said, welcome to the family. He said, I've been hearing all y'all shit for like, he said, he's been doing his research, but he finally met us and shit.
And,
yeah. And then that was that one interview. That's when I knew it was on. He's getting signed. He said, I'm going to prepare the paperwork. I said, oh shit. And then another time after that, what was another time? Oh, we met him somewhere outside some studio and shit. And the paperwork was going through. He wanted to just, because Puff like always have everybody around. He's like, yo, that's when he told us, think of a name. He's like, no, we're ready, the war. And then that's when he did that shit, the legendary story, when he said, yo, the war is over. Y'all with me now. Y'all the locks. He said, yo, y'all the locks. And it ain't just two of y'all. It's a three-man group. You and Styles. You, Styles, and Kiss. Word. Because the first time, I don't think, when the first time it was just me and Kiss up there. Second time, it was all three of us. Crazy. And then he said, yo, y'all three-man group, and the war is over. Now y'all the locks. Period.
Well,
we was like, yo, this nigga's crazy, man. What do you mean by that?
Well, all these years later, do you think that you made the right decision in bringing Styles
Absolutely.
In?
Okay. Absolutely. I can't even see it no other way. That's my brother to the death.
So, word up. So you guys, you know, welcome to the family. Does that mean that you go home and, like, tell everybody, like, you know?
Yeah, was your mom on board?
Hell yeah, yeah. My mom was excited. She was like, you know, but they want to see the paperwork. Any adult, anybody older than you want to see the paperwork.
Yeah.
See what's going on. You ready to sign that next album.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But, you know, they want to see the paperwork. They want to see what's up. But I was excited. I told everybody in the hood and on the block. But then they really don't. They like, yeah, whatever at first, too. Until these songs start popping up. You know what? Until they start seeing cameos and videos first. Because I think that's how they went before the songs got released. We were around and they'll see us around certain people now. You know what I mean? And making different moves.
So what
not
is Yeah, no, what does Welcome to the Family mean? Do you immediately go into the studio? Do you start working? Are you around, like, you know, no, Big? Are you around Craig Mack? Like, are
yeah, does he
yeah.
give
while
you sweatpants?
While the paperwork is getting developed, and all that shit, we'll come down to Daddy's house over there to the studio, wherever they're recording that.
Yeah,
not
yeah.
necessarily having a lot, not having a lot of songs to work on or nothing, but just basically being around the situation, like, oh shit, we walking in looking like, yo shit, that's Big over there, that's this person, that's Lil Kim, that's this, and they looking at us like, who the fuck are these guys? Like, but they knew because our shit on the street was buzzing, like I mean, anybody mixtape that was coming out, mixtapes was like Bibles back then, like any shit that was coming out, we was number one on everyone. Like, being number one on these mixtapes at the time was, or like top five or top three,
yeah,
was the shit. So we was number one on every fucking thing you can name. Like, we ran that shit for years. All that kind of shit.
Did you ever have a moment where you felt like imposter syndrome, where it was like, yo, these guys are professionals, like, you know, that's Lil Kim, that's Biggie, that's, you know, whoever.
Yeah, yeah, and, I don't deserve to be in this room.
Yeah, we're guys like from Yonkers, and like, what are we doing here?
Nah, I want to say at the time, and I'm not trying to sound funny, we was like, we'll body anybody in here. I swear to God, lyrically, we're ready for war. That's how we was with us. That's how we carried ourselves. You may have all that over us money and your fame. You blew up already, but our attitude was like, man, we dope on this mic. Like, we make dope records, and that's how we went about our shit. Like, I remember, like, as we blew, everybody, like, as we starting to blow up, every Big and all them people, like, bring people through and hear us rap while we in there working on our songs. We'll stop what we doing so much through the day because people are coming and like, yo, you got to hear these niggas. You know what I mean? It was like
if
that.
People are looking for the locks these days, there's a guarantee that you guys are in the studio. Was that something that was always in your DNA during the Bad Boy years as well?
Nah, we strong. That shit. I want to say we had a strong work ethic, but dealing with Puff made it even stronger. Seeing how hard he works, I'm gonna keep it 100, man. That man is like a workhorse, like dog. No matter what y'all say, and like it went for real. Like when he put his mind to it, he's there. He's going. He's coming back to the studio after. He's like, you know, we see that shit. And I always tell that story when he told us, y'all got nowhere near as the amount of money as me, and y'all go home earlier than me every night. He used to tell us that shit. Y'all go home like fucking wait. Y'all leave and go outside and go chill and go back to do whatever. He said, y'all ain't rich like me. He said, y'all ain't even make it like me, and y'all leaving every night like that. And that shit hit us hard. He used to make us go listen. He used to make us go listen to other people's albums and shit like that, dog. Like yo, not saying make, but like, you know, request that, yo, I need y'all to hear, listen to The Chronic.
Wow.
Tell me what y'all think tomorrow, like when y'all hear that whole album. Like, what did you get from that? Like what, how they formatted, meaning like how they formatted it. You know, what topics they touched on. You know, I guess he just didn't want us just rapping.
Yeah. Because
we came from like just spitting, at, you know, not no real destination, but just spitting, you know?
Yeah. Being from Westchester, what did Heavy D mean to you? And did Puff introduce you?
No, Hev's from Mount Vernon, New York. Rest in peace to Hev. I love that brother, man. Always. Hev was a major dude, man, and like behind a lot of Puff stuff and all that, man.
Yeah.
Decisions and all that, you know what I'm saying? From D.O. to all them guys out there, man. You know, much love. But nah, we knew them from Mount Vernon.
There's a certain pedigree that comes with being a bad boy artist, from Craig Mack to Biggie to Mace, who you guys knew from 125th. Yeah. And when it comes to you guys making an album,
yeah,
are you guys expecting to be global superstars right from the jump?
No, well, the mixtape scene went faster than anything else. Like, because the mixtape, you're in control of it. You can throw that shit out and make these songs and just push it out and do whatever you want, and it drops immediately and the world hears it.
Yeah.
And it's before the internet and shit like that. But when we started making these songs and formatting them and making real songs, it was procedure. Like, we was like, damn, man, when is Yo C going to come out, man? Shit, when is the song going to get played? When is the DJ in the, we used to run down on DJs. Not really run down on them, but like, ask them, can they play shit sometimes?
Like you know? Who? Flex?
No. But like in the club. Mm. Whoever's in the club DJing at the in the Palladium. So when our song comes on in the Palladium for the first time, we lost our mind. But he played it damn near when it was like five people left. In that But we was all but we was dancing around. Like when UFC came on in the Palladium, all we was like 20 deep. We was like, oh shit. You know what I mean? And I know the DJ is looking at us like, fuck me. You don't get any sound, the lights is on and shit. Like, yo, but that's, you know, but, you know, you don't, it's out of your control when it, you know, not now, but back then it's out of your control when it was time to make the real records. Because it's procedure. Clearance, getting it to the right people, you know what I mean?
Yeah, how comfortable were you with Puffy and the Hitmen and all those guys? And did you want to bring the Mushmen with you to keep that thing going?
You said the Mushmen?
Yeah.
No, it been fell out with us. But when we got with Puff, we had to get rid of them. It been fell out. They was doing grimy shit to us and shit.
For real?
So that shit, yeah, hell yeah. Like when we, you know, we got certain, business-wise, they wasn't doing it right. They wasn't doing it right to where, like, yo, they was trying to keep our advances and keeping money and shit like that. Not to slander them brothers, because we cool to this day.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
But
at the time, you know, yeah.
They was moving real fast. So DNY had to, like, put pressure on them, got us released. Paid them a little money and shit, got us released and shit, and that was that. But I really was basically, it was me and Kiss was planning on just bringing Styles.
Mm.
And you know what I mean? But then until he made us a group. And we, of course, was affiliated with Casino and a couple other people, but for the most part, it was just locks all day. That brotherhood was strong.
What about when, like, Suge reached out?
Suge, Mary, that was Mary again. Mary was like, yo, Mary was on a mission, man. I love you, Mary. She was just like, yo, Cheek, I'm gonna conference call you with Suge in a little while. I'm like, who? Nice. So ask Kiss, like, yo, the nigga Suge got on the phone. He's like, yo, man, I love y'all shit. I love everything y'all doing, this and that, and yada yada yada. I love for y'all to come out to the West so I can hear more and like and get y'all to join the team. He's like, oh shit. But at the time, a lot of that was happening because, like I said, Chub Rock tried, Eddie F tried, Dave Hall, all these like executive kind of people was trying to get us to sign with them.
So was there any part of you, like, in the years, like, when the West was really popping off, was there any part of you that was like, oh, we could have done that?
Nah, because when the West was popping off, they was, of course, extra dope as fuck. But like, we came in kind of like when they started battling, when Big started battling with them and getting into beef with them. You know what I mean? It was like, yeah, we wanted to jump in them battles and say our words. We wanted to come back and say some shit back at them. But we was told, nah, stay out of it. I swear, no lyrics, nothing, just stay all the way out of that
Who
shit.
Told you that?
I think it was like Puff and all them. I want to say Puff and all them. Probably our management, DNY. Like, not lyrically, we was ready for whatever. I just think that they was just like, you know what? That's Big and I'm like, leave it. That's that.
Who brought If You Think I'm Jiggy to the table?
If You Think I'm Jiggy, we was in there one night. We was making an actual project, the actual album and shit. And that beat was playing from the Neptunes. You know, they did that track and shit.
Really?
Yeah. That was one of their first records.
Wow.
And then they did that shit, and then and then they flipped it, and then we was just bugging out with the hook and shit like that. We know, if you really, what was that, Rod Stewart?
Rod Stewart.
Yeah, so we just flipped it and shit. Puff was loving it, and we didn't think we was like, at the time, we didn't think it was like a soft record. But I guess coming from our background of lyrics, you know, it was like, yo, what the fuck are these guys doing? And then when he put the shiny suits on us and shit, it was like, you really, like, kind of confused motherfuckers with the Jiggy shit. Some people liked it.
Wait, I thought that was a Dame Grease song.
Dame Grease made Jiggy?
Yeah.
I don't know. That's what the credits say right there?
That's what the Wikipedia says. So, you Dame know, Grease. could be true, yeah, could yeah, not
I
be
don't
true.
Know. Double check. Unless did they see if the Neptunes did the remix, flipped it.
Yeah, do we need to get someone publishing for this? Like, how are we?
I know, right? I think the Neptunes did the remix. I don't know which one was the original. But, yeah.
Wow. So
if you look at it, it's one of Pharrell's first tracks, the Jiggy shit.
So you're working on tracks like that. You're part
of.
Yeah,
we didn't think it was no soft shit at the time. We was just having fun in the studio.
Well, that bad boy energy must have translated beyond the songs, beyond the music videos, and taken you on tour.
Absolutely.
So you bought in.
Yeah, for the most part, I mean, like, it was some songs that, like, you know, like I said, that I wasn't feeling or I didn't think it was for us or whatever. But Puff, you know, at the time was just like, yo, dog, listen, you got to, like, trust me on certain records. Because, you know, we was only coming from the streets of Youngest. So he was just telling us, like, yo, in Atlanta, this shit is going to bump. Texas, this is going to be crazy. Like, you know, he was giving us a broader perspective of it. After a while, you don't want to hear that shit because all you care about is your little Youngest team. Like, you care if they like it in the tri-state.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He made it more like my mind to this day. I think of Everywhere Else because of that kind of thinking.
So was it frustrating to, like, you know, your team back home that you weren't, like, making the same type of records that you did before you signed?
Nah, back home, especially in the streets of New York, because, like, what we'll do is, even to this day, like, we'll still put out monster, like, street shit first. That's the shit he had no control. We'll still pull out mixtapes and shit like that, and then he'll come with them big top 10 records. Like, you know what I'm saying? We always had a balance. Like, the motherfuckers could do this song with Mariah and then give you, like, Niggas Done Start or something.
Yeah.
Shit like that.
Yeah.
So we always somehow had a mainstream underground kind of thing going with us.
So Puff ends up being a great collaborator and a great mentor to you. And then your friend B.I. dies. Are you left lost? Do you think you don't know what to make of life, and how long does that weight stay on your shoulders? How do you move forward?
I can actually speak for all of us. We was like, when Big, because, you know, we were out there at the time. We was there. We was at the party. We was going to go hang with him. We was actually going to get in the car with him to go to that next party. We was going to go to a Clue party up in the hills and shit. Big and him said, don't get in the car. Like, nah, we'll meet y'all up there. You know, we was young niggas. We just wanted to jump in with them. So anyway, they deaded us. They said, we meet y'all there and shit, little niggas, like, whatever, right? Boom, all right, cool, we meet y'all up there. So long story short, like, after he passed, it was more like, I wonder if Puff is going to keep going. Is Bad Boy over? Like, because that shit is kind of traumatizing to the head of your label or whoever. Like, and, you know, it may be a while to get back on your feet. You know what I mean? I'm not trying to sound selfish, but we was like, yo, we ain't know where the job stood at.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And basically, we was just, that was our concern. I remember my mom calling that night and seeing if we was okay, and she was just like, yo, and Puff put us on a flight, a private plane that night, like, early morning, got us up out of there, and I think...
What's that flight like? Is that flight just, like,
the
just
longest?
Quiet?
It was intense and quiet, and a lot of concern, a lot of questioning, like, yo, damn, like, kind of like, what's next? And it, I know it's so soon, but you're like, yo, what's next? As far as, like, is it retaliation? Can you come back to L.A.?
Yeah.
Is this label still for us? Is Puff quitting? Is he going to be threatened? Is he dying next? Like, you know, it was that kind of concern going on. Fuck. Like, do we leave? Yeah, so it was just crazy, you know? But I knew once we had made this shit called Love Big Papa.
Yep.
And shit, yeah. Right, just on our own. That was with Dame Grease. He made that. He could have made Jiggy too. I don't know. Yeah, but I know Neptune did
the remix. Yeah, I checked.
It did, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. But look, and then so like when we made Love Big Papa and shit, like, and then I think that inspired Puff to make his Missing You record. It absolutely did, because he wasn't thinking of one. He was like, yo, I love what y'all did. I want to shoot the video. I want to do. I'm like, so that's when I knew he was kind of back on his music shit. But he was definitely down for a minute, which had everybody else down.
Yeah.
And so
how long did that period of just like trauma like last with you? Like how long did that feeling just like exist within you?
It was a long time. I ain't gonna lie. It was a long, everybody was depressed. The state of hip hop in New York was depressed from on the radio with Angie and everybody crying, and like Brooklyn when we went to the funeral. It went for a long time before everybody started celebrating his life. Like, you know what I mean? It went for a long time, especially being creative. You know, even though we had the songs and we shot the video, Love Big Pop, it was just like sad moments, you know, and to keep pushing forward, you know, even going back to LA, you still kind of was like in a different vibe, you know?
Who were you? Where were you when Tupac was shot?
Somewhere in Yonkers. I don't think doing too much of nothing too major. I don't think doing nothing too crazy. Like somewhere in Yonkers. Yeah. But I remember I heard about it. It was more of a I heard about it thing with Pac.
Right.
I knew the studio. What you mean when he passed?
Yeah. Like yeah.
In Vegas.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, because you know the New York situation,
right?
At Quad, yeah.
Right. No, I don't remember exactly where I was at with that situation.
Who were you closest with besides Mace in the Bad Boy camp? Like, were you close with 112? Were you close with Total? Like, how did those friendships work?
Nah, I would say just the Junior Mafia.
Mm.
Of course, Total. Everybody was cool and shit. I remember I used to tell Total, and I'm yo, put me in the video as your. As the leading nigga, man. That guy's telling me, yo, I'm that nigga. I swear to God, I thought I was hot to death. Like, yo, put me in there as the nigga with no shirt on and all that. Like, oh, shit. Man, that was my confidence level. But mainly, like, Junior Mafia and D-Rock and all them, C-Gutta and all them, they connected it with us crazy. Like,
Not Carl Thomas or anybody?
Hell yeah, Carl Thomas. That's my nigga. Of course. I'm not saying that we weren't cool with 12 and all them, but like, come on, it was Gutter and then C's and Trife and all them. Like, you know, we just regular niggas, Brooklyn niggas and Yonkers niggas, just, you know, doing regular shit.
Meanwhile, you're showing up on a fucking helicopter with Mariah, so.
Absolutely. See, that's the good shit with Puff, man. I tell you to this day, it's different worlds. Like, you know, you got Rough Riders, the gritty, grimy shit, which everybody grew to love and shit, you know what I mean? Because I think it was timing with all this kind of shit.
Yep.
And then Puff would give you that fucking fly shit. Puff would give you the fly shit. Like, I never been to parties like Puff ever again in my life since then.
Yeah.
How Puff do it. I mean, I caught back up with him and did it big and big tours and shit and after parties. But like, he, at the time, we didn't really get it how big he was doing it.
Yeah, you said you went out to like the Hamptons and you still had your Tims on, right?
All that. Tims on a boat, nigga. We come in there all fucked up looking at shit, like, you know what I'm saying? Kiss might have been like a little flyer than us, and shit, cause, you know, he had like a little different shit, but me and Styles like, yo, nigga, we ready, watching our back, like, we fucking Rikers Island somewhere, man. We on a fucking luxury yacht.
Yo, when you got on Get At Me Dog, did you have any idea what that would turn into and what kind of movement that felt like?
Nah, not really. Not really. We a lot of the songs that The Lost make, man, I could tell you, I swear to this day, like, they're just what's on our minds right then and there, and like in the spirit of everything, and we hope you love it. You know what I mean? We actually, I'm literally say, like, we kind of don't go for, like, we don't say this is gonna be a single, this is gonna be this and that, this is gonna, we kind of like just make this music and hope our core fan base love it, and that shit turned out, it worked so many times, so like, you know, our judgment, I guess, is pretty good, man, with the music.
Well, but then how do you choose a single for any project? Like, what is the
criteria?
Yeah.
No, well, I mean, in today's, like, during the process back then, it was just like making hit music. Like, you know, if the producer's a big producer, you know, the shit might go. Like, you know what I mean? But my lyrics would remain the same.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Now, today's kind of like you format it like that with the short verses and the hook and the dope producer. Like, you kind of like craft it that way today. But back then, it was just like, man, if Benjamin's go, it go. Or niggas don't start us some or wild out. Like, you know, it was just dope music to us.
Did your mom ever like pull you aside and be like, Sean, I heard one of your tracks and
absolutely
this is a little
absolutely
like who is this guy rapping, like, I don't know him.
Yo, she couldn't stand with all the cursing and all that shit, and grimy, I shoot you and all that wild crazy shit. She used to tell me, yo, try for the women. I swear to God, my mom always tell me that, go for the women. But it was a time she used to always tell me that, to tone it down and do some other shit. And I swear to God, like, before I got into the making them chick records, like, Groovy Lou and all these people used to always say, yo, Luch, the chicks like you. Try a chick record. I'm telling you, try this shit. And because I was really, like, hesitant as far as, like, you know, because the group I'm coming from.
Sure.
You know, I can't talk no chicks. I can't say good love. I can't, you know, like, you know what I mean? But, yo, that shit, they couldn't wait. The woman is a different market, man.
Well, meanwhile, you're trying to be in every music video with your shirt off.
In total,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, true. Just having fun. You know, you the regular street nigga, just having fun. Like, yo, come love on me and shit like that, you know. But when I realized how to format these chick records and shit and not sound like all too grimy and gritty, it worked. Crazy. Oh,
okay, so going up to Angie, you know, being on the radio and threatening Puff to, you know, throw a refrigerator down off the roof and all that stuff. How confident were you that you were going to get off the label?
With Puff, I think that's why we kind of did that, to stir up some stuff. Like, these motherfuckers actually, Kiss and Styles came up during my, I had an album dropping and shit. These niggas used my platform. I'm talking about fucking shit like that. I was fucking pissed off. Man, I thought they was coming to help my project out and say some shit. The niggas didn't mention one song on my shit, man. Not one fucking single. The niggas go up there flipping and shit. I'm looking like, and Angie like, it's fucked up, man. She gets up here promoting shit. Y'all going, like, she wanted more. She wanted more of that shit. Like, you know, tell me more with the locks. But like, yo, them niggas ain't even mentioned nothing. It's going down, nothing. You know what I'm saying? Like, the fuck, man? I wish they could see my face, that shit. Like, yo, but the reason they did that is because none of the other shit was working, like, far as getting off the project. I mean, you know, even Let the Lies Go campaigns and all that. Puff wasn't moving like that. You wasn't shaking him up like that. Puff had big lawyers.
If you had a one-on-one conversation with him, would he like bring that same energy, or was he just like, fuck you? Like, no, you signed a contract and you're stuck in it.
Not necessarily fuck you, but like, it would be like, all right, well, I understand your concern. Let's see what we could do. It was more like that. It was more like, I understand this and that. All right. So, how can we make it better? Or let me talk to the lawyer, see if we can work this shit out. And then everybody go their way. But you could keep, somebody could keep spinning you like that and say, you don't realize months is going by. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so, you know, and eventually you're not shelved, but, you know, you're still spinning and waiting for a lawyer and waiting for this person to say this and that. So, you know, we figured out the best way to get at them and have which was the people, you know.
And was there any discussion that you might go anywhere else other than Rough Riders?
No. Well, Rough Riders, I don't know who else was the labels at the time. That movement, they had their movement starting with us and then going with X was picking up so crazy. It was like a no-brainer. Like, they were, like, I mean, from Bad Boy, Rough Rider, Cash Money, that was it.
Rockefeller,
You may have Rockefeller at the same time, but I think their squad was kind of, like, solidified and shit. Dame tried to get the locks over there mad times. He was like, yo, this would be one big happy family. He used to always say that shit to us.
Really?
Yeah, hell yeah. Dame used to always try to, like, get that shit going, but we was actually, D&Y was more like our big brothers than anything. Besides management, they was our big brother, so it was like, yo, what better, nigga? These niggas got big deals. They know what it is already.
DMX signs to Def Jam. He's the hottest thing on the streets. Rough Riders gets their imprint, and you guys are down with the team. Everyone can look back now and be like, oh, yeah, Swiss Beats, but you saw something in him that other people didn't.
No, that was our little nigga. Mm-hmm. Swiss is our little, that was my little brother. Like, even so, you know. Because you understand, like, if when X took off, it had a lot to do with us.
Yeah.
You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
From Money, Power, Respect, the niggas done start all these records like that. All right, yo, we going to, D&M would say, yo, we going to throw X on. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
These are records. And then, like, you know, he kept niggas done started something and all that kind of shit. But these are records that the Locks had. So, you know, it was like, we had a lot to do with all that. And you know, we knew Swiss from back then. He was D's little nephew. And, you know, I remember naming him Swiss.
Really?
Swizzy. I used to call him Swizzy. Yeah, shit like that. He'll tell you, like, you know, he used to always call and play the tracks to us. He was always dope, real creative, real energetic like that. Like that. And he was living in Atlanta.
Yeah.
And me and D was running around, you know, doing whatever, before the music. And he used to call, like, yo, play this to my uncle. Like, let's tell him, listen to this. Yo, tell him I need this Triton keyboard. I need this and that. And I'd be like, all right, say no more. I got you. When he get back in the car, I'm going to tell him.
Yeah, Swiss, you know what I mean? Swiss told us that you were the one out of everybody who really, like, you know.
Believed in him. Yeah.
Believed in him, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I was like, right, I was like running around and shit, right? I was right next to D, you know what I'm saying? Before the music shit, like, you know, around
yeah,
that
yeah,
time.
Yeah, yeah,
so it was easy to, like, to relay the message from his nephew and shit.
We Are the Streets is such a definitive piece of work. You know, you and Swiss and Rough Riders all coming together, and people can look and be like, that is Yonkers yeah. right there. Was there any hesitation, you know, coming from that big sort of pop top 10 type of world that Bad Boy has, that you're going into this thing that's more rugged, that's more street, that's more tough? Was there any, like, apprehension there, considering, like, you know what works and this thing is so new?
I want to say no, because it was easy for us, because we came from that gritty shit, went to that kind of, like, top 10 making record type sound, all the way back to that, because DMX and DNY and all them niggas were setting the trend for all that grimy shit back again. With the no shirts and the pit bulls and that hardcore shit. We was like, nigga, that's what we do anyway.
Pull-ups.
Yeah.
So it was kind of like easy. And it was easy. And like in the executives that we needed to talk to was DNY. I was like, shit, nigga. We run around with them. So what the fuck? Ain't nothing to talk about.
Yeah. I mean, did Rough Riders have their business like down pat?
Nah, not at all. Not at all. They tried like, as far as, like, you know, they had, like, this sister running a certain part of it. They kept it real family, like, where everybody had a role to play. You know what I mean? From the pops to everybody was doing that. But, you know, some of these people was kind of forced into these positions that had no interest in music or really, really didn't do that before that.
Yo, I think I know the answer to this, but Sheik, were you ever a real motorcycle guy?
Nah, never. I never even owned a motorcycle. ever. Word, no Williams, none of that shit. Word, that Wait. Was this their flow. They started them the bike chapters and this and that.
Yeah.
But nah, we wasn't Williams. We wasn't doing none of that motorcycle.
Yo,
shit.
when
look dope.
When 400, you know, dudes in, like, leather vests, you know, show up with that big R, double R on the back, and they're all doing yeah. wheelies and everything, you're just like, all right, cool, I'll yeah. take the...
I'm going to take a...
I'll take the, it, the 20.
I was like, yeah. yo, who the fuck are these people, man? I can't even get in my own club. These niggas getting in before me and shit like that. I was like, yo, this is crazy. Who are these niggas and shit like that? It was... So this shit, they ran this shit like a big gang for real, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, what was the biggest difference between the vibe of Bad Boy and the vibe of Rough Riders?
Bad Boy was fly as fuck. Rough Riders was the Warriors, man. I don't think it was one, besides Eve, no other girl was around with Rough Riders, man. I didn't see one other chick with Rough Riders. Rough Riders was Rikers Island at every show. Every show, Puff shit was food with the light under it and shit, with the candle under it, and the broom smelled dope. And, you know, you get on stage and have security and shit. Like, that's how their shit was. D and them shit was like, yo, they was coming from the street. They getting this big-ass bag. They got the hottest artist in New York, and they running with it. They don't give a fuck. That's how they was doing it. Their meetings was as such and all that, man, like, with executives. And they didn't really rub shoulders with a lot of people. And, you know, they, so to say, like, they didn't go play golf with a lot of people or, you know what I mean? Their whole shit was like, yo, we it, and that's how they moving.
When it comes down to it, like, you've been all across the country, you've toured with, like, so many different factions. Is there any harder group than Rough Riders?
As far as label, record
yeah.
label?
Yeah.
Nah, not at the time. Nah, they was the hardest shit out. Rough Riders was the hardest shit out. I mean, I'm gonna keep it 100. Rough Riders the hardest shit out. Period. Yeah, back in that time, man. You know, everybody had their thing, Cash Money.
Yep.
You know, they was coming from that whole New Orleans scene and showing you an insight on, like, how they moved back then. And, you know, Cash Money was the ones, like, they kept it ghetto too, as far as, like, they had no project chicks in their videos. They had, like, regular hood bitches in their shits, like, bugging out. And yeah. I think people like that. They're like, yo, shit, she looked like me or he looked like me, and everybody's cool. Like, you know, people can relate when they see that kind of shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Exactly. Well, Puff kind of had it. Puff had it to where, nah, bitch, she don't look like you. That bitch, I don't know where she from. He flew that bitch from Brazil somewhere, nigga. Ooh, shit. Like, that was Puff thing, and it worked. You know what I mean? The Rough Riders was just like, we these Harlem, like, youngest dudes, and we do the wheelies. They had their gimmicks, you know? The Klan had the kung fu shit and all that. Like, everybody had their thing with it. Everybody had their thing.
Well, what kind of girls were you meeting at, like, your shows when you were on Rough Riders?
None. What girls is at the show? Wasn't no girls. No bitches at our shows were Rough Riders. At all, bro. I'm talking about the Madison Square Garden. Sword fight. Pickle Park.
Oh, my God.
Pickle Yo, Garden. Pickle Park and that shit. Word.
You saying the girls didn't want to yell all the lyrics to Wild Out?
See, here's the thing. Women don't like, even in today, you know, like, say it's shootings and shit going on at clubs, ain't no women coming out, dog. Like you got to understand, when you scare the women away, it's a wrap. It's a wrap. And then, you know, so it's a trickle effect, because once you scare the women away, and remember Uncle Luke told you this shit, man. Once you scare the women away, it fucks up everything, because the dudes only come out because it's going to be bitches there.
Oh, my God.
You only going out because it's chicks at the club and it's going to be lit like that. You ain't going out because there's a bunch of dudes there, man. You want to see the chicks. Once you scare them away, it's a wrap.
Well, then where did you meet women?
No, like, they probably be at the after parties and shit like that. But, like, you know, if they too scared for the show, you know, it's crazy. You want them. That's why people would have, like, Puff would have all that grimy shit going on, like with Big and all that. But he'll throw an Usher on the tour, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So when you're, like, at your guy's height, obviously everyone comes calling and they're like, yo, you got to have a solo album, right? So I remember, like, that fever where they're like, yo, we're going to get, like, the Lox album, but we're going to get, like, solo records from everybody, and everyone was looking forward to that. Did you feel, like, pressure to make a solo album? Like, not, like, there was never a question that you guys were going to split up, but people wanted you to, like, have a full album of Chic Looch.
When the Lox shit was bubbling and all that, I was like, I was kind of cool with it, just the Lox bubbling. Not even thinking of no solo kind of project shit. And then I ain't even think that DNY and them niggas was even looking at me like that to make no solo shit. Like, I thought they was looking past me and not giving me that credit to do my own solo shit. Right? Like, yo, man, Styles and Kiss got this situation. They getting paper. They doing this and that. It came later to me. Like, one of my homies like, yo, do a freestyle and push some shit out. I just want to see something. I did it. And everybody was like, oh, shit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they was loving the shit. I started my own movement called D-Block.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Me and Super Mario. I grabbed Super Mario.
Bad boy.
Young boy named J-Hood and shit like that. And we started our own movement and had motherfuckers go crazy around the world with this whole D-Block shit. You get what I'm saying? Styles Kiss definitely came on. And but for the most part, it was like, yo, it was me like saying that, you know, y'all ain't even looking at me over here. Let me move on and make my own noise.
Yeah. Well, what did it mean
for... That's how it was, because it was like real Kiss, heavy Kiss, heavy Kiss, heavy Kiss. And then when Styles made good, I Get High, that shit popped off all crazy, but then he went to jail.
Yeah.
But still, like, they DNY wasn't looking at me or trying to help my situation at all. Not in a bad way like that, but for the most part, like, you know, no, it wasn't the attention that I needed. I don't even know if I gave them the incentive that I wanted to either.
Well, you know what I mean? How did that make you feel?
I think it did fuck me up. Like, yo, what's up, man? Y'all ain't looking at me. What's up? I think it did fuck me up to make me want to go do my own thing. Yeah. Hell yeah.
What was your feeling like when Jada and Styles did their solo projects? Like, when Jada did his first? Like, what was that feeling like?
And it's not just saying no bullshit, like, extra proud. Like, yo, that shit is hot. I couldn't wait to be in the videos, to come there, to do all that shit. I thought it was fire.
And it was fire.
Solo shit, I was like, yo, this shit is fire. That's the part that nobody couldn't fuck up. No matter what, I was proud as fuck of Styles and Kiss, of everything they was doing, period. So when it was my turn to start getting busy, when I was making these records and shit, they was like, oh, shit, this movement is crazy. I'm fucking with you, Luce. This is crazy right here. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's the only thing, us three, that no one could ever, like, break or fuck up. The world or whoever probably be like, ah, Styles and Kiss gonna be, Styles she gonna be mad at Kiss going solo. Nah, we was some of the happiest motherfuckers, or vice versa. That's how it always been with us.
So how did it feel when you did the deal with Def Jam and you did put out those solo projects? Did you get the same?
Hell yeah, nah, it was lit. It was lit when I did the Everywhere We Go, and I did all them fucking Kiss Your Ass Goodbyes, and when I got with Koch and E1 and all these records, and fucking Good Love, number one on both stations. And, you know, this, it was dope.
Yeah.
It was dope. And we had this Young Boy Hood and shit like that and everything. And Super Mario was a genius coming from the Bad Boy era.
Yep.
Like, you know what I mean? He, you know, he's the one that put out Benjamins and all these kind of records. And it was just amazing, man. It was, you know, it was dope. It feels good.
Oh, speaking of Benjamins, can you talk about your experience recording that down in Virginia and what Missy Elliott had to do with everything?
Nah, but it was in New York.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was in New York. Missy was just here.
Oh, got she, it, she got from, it.
Yeah, Missy was up in her daddy's house and shit. Well, at the time we didn't even know who she was. She was in there with Puff, going over. I think I don't know what they was in there talking about. We just got there and we came in the room. She was like, "What's up, y'all?" And they was looking at that video she had with Regina. What's her name, right? With one of them songs she had, and she was just like, "Yo, let me hear y'all rap. I heard so much about y'all." And this, we was like, "All right, dope." He had the beat playing. I was like, "You got another beat?" We was all like, "Yo, you got a different beat than this shit." It's the Benjamins, though. Nobody don't really believe that. Like, yo, it was the Benjamins. Like, yo, you got another. He's like, "Nah, to this." And it was the bing, ding, 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 ding. And I just start spitting. I was strictly trying to cop those. Boom. She was like, "That's crazy. That needs to be on this track." Kiss went, right? She was like, "Oh, that's sick." Boom. Styles went. She was like, "Cool." You know, because, you know, I swear to God, because, like, yo, you know what it was? Styles didn't have his shit written to that beat, or none of us did. And strictly trying to cop those wasn't meant for Benjamins and Kiss shit and nobody shit. It was just fit. It just fit with it. And then it was a long ass verse. Hacking hard when you was pussy, and I went did the whole shit. She was bugging in the room, dancing and doing these footworks and shit like that, and doing like bugging out beat bars. I'm like, "Yo, shorty's crazy." It's like, "Yo, I swear." She was just like, "Yo, man, yo, y'all gonna write Puff's verse?" And Puff's sitting there like, "Listen, like, y'all gonna write Puff's verse? You gonna keep that strictly trying to shit, blah, 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 blah." And she kind of painted, she executive produced that whole record. I swear to God. And it was like a little MIDI room.
And you were just like, what?
She might not remember this shit, but I know, I'm telling you, she was in there and word. Yep.
That's so crazy.
Yo, she does remember it, by the way.
Yeah, she said on Twitter.
Yeah, she was tweeting about it.
Dope. Yeah.
Yeah, so, man. So all these years later, by the way, when Jada does the Versus battle against Fabolous like a couple weeks ago, yes. And we were texting with him back and forth ahead of time, being like, "Yo, play this, make sure you do this, go to this early," or whatever, which he did a lot of, which like made us like insanely proud for something that has that has no consequences whatsoever.
Yeah.
But and he destroyed it. But we were like, "Yo, make sure to play Victory," and then, like, you know, because he wrote the verse for Puff, and then flip the chair over and leave, right? But he played it, and a lot of people did not know that he was behind that. But like making that album and being a part of that whole process,
being part of the family.
Yeah. Puff Daddy and the family. What was that energy like? Because that is, you know, after Big died, that is that like, you know, sort of Puff is coming back and now he's at the forefront of this.
Yeah.
What was that energy like?
It was dope, man. I ain't gonna lie. Like, it was the Goodfellas project. Then he changed it to Puff Daddy and the family. It was the Goodfellas at first and shit.
Really? It was called the Goodfellas?
Yeah. Goodfellas, yeah. It was the Goodfellas. You hear him say it in some of the songs, Goodfellas.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it was that, and then he changed it to the other joint. I don't know, probably, I don't know if the movie was coming out, Goodfellas. I don't know what was going on, but it was a dope vibe, man. Running around and shooting the album cover in Miami and just seeing different things and getting back on track, you know?
Yeah.
Kind of dope.
Okay, so we know that the Lox album is a real thing. We've heard, you know, Loyalty and Love. We've heard, you know, we've seen that you guys
have a documentary.
Well, we watched the documentary, but we've seen that you guys filmed a music video with DMX.
We shot that like a couple of weeks ago.
Crazy. It's been a project that has been long talked about, right? We know that, you know, some of the producers you've worked with, we know all the time you've put into this. What has been, and obviously, like, we know you guys are, you know, been signed, distributed through Roc Nation for the past like 3 or 4 years, something like that. But what has this been like between the last project and this time? Why have you guys not put anything out like as a full project in so long?
Well, what was the last one? Like, what was the last Filthy America?
Well, but that was like an EP, right?
But that was kind of like an EP. Basically, really at first was trying to find a home for it before we got to Roc Nation, and then really like our solo projects, we would release like a bunch of stuff here and there, and just like not really focusing on that particular project. And then we'll do a lot of run around touring and shit like that. you know, that's what it was. And then when we really got like solid on the Lox project, we had to fly over here to get beats from this person, go to LA and do this, all kind of shit. People just wanted that shit to be big, to be incredible. But now it's just moving the dates around with the corona and everything like that going on. So it's ready though. We ready. We just actually heard a lot of the mixes right now.
Oh, yeah. That's awesome.
The mixes, yeah, yeah.
That's super dope.
Yeah, you just have no studio
to play it in. Here we go. We just go.
You have no studio to play it in.
I know. Word, but I play it on my phone and shit.
Yeah. So obviously, you know, Sheik, you live a real life as well. You have investments. You have houses in different states. You're a businessman.
Yes,
you have had two or three different D-Block studios.
Yeah.
You've raised a family. There's ups, yep. There's downs, and then there's devastation. And, you know, tell us about your mom being diagnosed with cancer and what your experience through that was.
Yeah, cancer is tough, man. It's like actually my first time. I've seen people pass and all that. No one as close as my mom, but I've seen people pass from different things. But cancer is like, is bad. I hate that disease. As far as I'm pretty sure everyone else does, how it eats away at you and breaks you down is the crazy part about cancer.
Yep. Yeah.
You know what I mean? So you watch somebody that's incredibly healthy, young, going to work. You know, my mom was 53 when she passed. So it's like, yo,
wow.
Young, going to work, doing this and that. You see how they break down and need help with everything after and can't breathe. And it's like, it's bad. Cancer's no good. When people say fuck cancer, they mean that shit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But at the same time, it gives you like it makes you strong, far as like, and then you see things different. I used to tell the story all the time. Like, I'll go to the hospital, Sloan over there and all
yep,
that.
Yep, Sloan Kettering.
And the people that have cancer, they are so positive, and they asking me, how am I doing today? How you feeling? They smiling and asking me, can I talk? And yo, and you know, their attitude is so great. So I get outside and I see people arguing over dumb shit and bullshit beefs. It's like, man, these people in there are so happy and like and positive, and they riddled with cancer. And we out here arguing over dumb shit. It makes you think of, it gives you a whole different insight on life itself.
So,
for real.
Yeah, I think like when our father passed away from esophageal cancer, like,
right.
I think that, his battle was fairly quick. It was like 6 weeks. But I was grateful for because he went to hospice and it was his choice. And I think that for us, I was happy that we were able to have a chance to say goodbye because so many people don't have that opportunity.
Especially now, by the way, like just, you know, considering like, you know, the
COVID,
state of the world.
Yeah, how you have to do everything on like Skype or Zoom or whatever.
Yeah.
It's just like, so were you able to say goodbye to your mom? Like, did you have that closure? Yeah.
Absolutely. She fought it for like 2 years. She fought it for like 2 years. But I think she knew. I think the doctors, she didn't tell me everything, but because when she was like, yo, you need to know where everything is at with these houses. You need to know this and that. You need to know. As long as she was telling me that, it was for a reason. Like, come on, we need to fly down here and deal with these couple of houses and do this and that, this and that. I'm like, nah, we keep everything going the way things were. Like, you know, I put the money up and you do this and that. But she was like, no. She had everything organized and she knew everything, man. And this was coming to spend more time with me and, you know, going on my walks and stuff. And she kind of knew. She knew everything. It was just prepping me.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, like, did you feel naive to death at that point?
A little bit. Cause I at first I thought she's gonna beat it.
Yeah.
Cause at first everybody feels like, nah, you're gonna beat this. You're all right. You good. Cause me not knowing everything about cancer. Like I know everything right now. Like, you know, but not knowing everything about it was like, you know, I was just off.
Well, I'm curious what your thought was, you know, it's someone we all knew very well, Ice Pick. You know, lost his battle to cancer and
absolutely.
The way that he went about it was different in that they, you know, he and some people around him tried to do experimental, you know, drugs.
Well,
and,
very holistic, you know, like they didn't want to do Western medicine. They didn't trust the hospitals.
And they also didn't want to like put the sort of message out there and they would do it privately. Do you feel like one way works more than another or is just like to each their own?
You know what? I of course you're gonna say to each his own, but when you love somebody, you want to know, you want to be there for them, you want to encourage them, you want to tell them,
yeah.
You want to. I think I would rather know so I could be there, so I could help, so I could do this and that. When you keeping it private, it's just you and a couple of people around you that know, so you're suffering alone.
Right.
You know what I mean? You need that. You need to have people around to actually, even if they can't help you medically, to make you laugh and give you that encouragement. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that. It's hard to walk in some places and you're losing weight, but you really can't tell. You can't tell nobody what's wrong with you.
Are you at a place now in your life where you're able to look back and be like, I'm grateful for the time that I did have with my mom?
Absolutely.
More than the feeling of like loss and what could have been.
Yeah. No, I'm thankful every day for everything she taught me. Because my mom was heavy on education and like heavy on and not using salt and not, you know, too much sugar. And like she was that. My mom, they from Kingston, Jamaica and shit. So it's like, just heavy on that kind of shit. Everything she taught me, I apply to everything I do to this day. Yeah.
Do you still every day find, like, because sometimes, like, you know, I'll be like, you know, cooking dinner or something like that, and I can like do something or flip some, you know, vegetables or something and feel like,
yeah.
Just like my watching. Dad, right?
Absolutely. Like he's watching and like, absolutely. Yeah. Like he's watching or like, you know, I even when I throw in the salt and all, I'd be like, yo, sorry. I gotta add this shit. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
That's cool. So, you know, you've gone on, you have some sons, you're a father now. What gives you the most pride these days beyond the music?
Oh, of course. You just nailed it. Them. Just watching them grow up. I mean, it sounds generic, but it's real. When you have kids, it's like this scene that every day that changes and you cool with them being them changing. I'm very cool. Like, I want to see the different fashion stages he going through, the different what makes him mad, like what makes him want to get into a fight, like how he gets pissed at me. I want to know all that, and what, you know, it's interesting, it's dope,
and
because it's a part of you.
And do you think about the fact that music and specifically your voice has allowed you and your family this life?
I never that's a good question. I never really thought of that, like, you know, my voice and like the things I did allowed this life, man. I gotta say, you know what, too, though, man. Besides, of course, financially it did, but overall, I think being a good person really, really helped with a lot of shit. Being a good person and using your brain in certain situations helped me to have this life as well. Because the wrong turn could be easily made, bro. Easily made, and you know, and fuck up that whole life, rapper or not, dope rapper or not. I think me being a better person gave me a better life.
Well, do you think that were there people in your life besides your mom who like looked out and were like, yo, maybe you don't want to do this and I'm going to guide you to go this way? Or did they sort of like look at you and say, well, he'll figure that on his own?
Nah, I really didn't have too many people like holding me down. It was like Uncle E, you know what I'm saying? A couple of close homies and shit. You hear it all in my lyrics. Like it was really just me and my mom. You know what I mean? And she encouraged like, yo, you could do this shit. You definitely could do it. So and when I told her, yo, we gonna try this shit one more time, then I'm gonna go back to school. I'm gonna finish school. I'm gonna do whatever you need me to do.
Yeah.
You know, so a lot of people listening to this know that we have a movie podcast as well. We do a Two Jews and Two Black Dudes Review the
Absolutely.
Movies.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Fire.
That's right.
Which, by the way, we have to somehow figure out how to do that in quarantine.
Yeah, remotely.
Or, I mean, maybe it's just like, this is the only friend group that we're allowed to like see in person. And we do that, but like,
man, we could come back to your spot with the mask on.
Yeah.
Man, fuck that. It's good. Right.
This will be. Yeah.
The only problem is that you guys keep bringing more and more people.
No, we won't do that. Yeah. Absolutely. We cannot do that at all. That would be wrong. That's disrespectful to bring outsiders besides us in.
Yo, this is gonna be like the NBA bubble.
Yeah.
No, I know. You can't do that. Yeah.
But I want to know, one, what movies are you watching while inside?
Last night I just watched, and you know, this is one of my favorite guys, Adam Sandler. That's my boy. Yo, you gotta watch that shit. Y'all seen That's My Boy at all?
No, you know, I would hate that.
Oh my god, no, I know you. Yo, That's My Boy is one of the funniest. I love Adam Sandler, so I watched that last night. I think I'm out of the whole binge watching thing, far as like, because everybody's going outside now and doing shit. So yeah, I don't think I've been binge watching anything.
Yeah, I mean, like. Same with us. I think that I've been watching some TV stuff on HBO and Netflix and Hulu.
Yeah.
We just watched the Andy Samberg movie on Hulu called Palm Springs, which is really good.
Oh, okay. Really good. Yeah, yeah. I just seen it come out. I seen that. Yeah. I didn't watch it, but I know you stole my. Yeah.
It's really good. Definitely recommend it.
Man.
But yeah, no.
I gotta say that fucking skit that you did with Kiss is fucking hilarious. Oh, my best one yet.
About his laugh.
Incredible, man.
That's what, you were there. What are you talking about? You're acting like you weren't there.
Your level of like creativeness is so cute, and then he walks and looks, but doesn't say anything.
Yeah. Yo,
everyone knew it was the yellow outfit. And
yeah,
all that.
Yeah.
Crazy. Genius.
Thank you very much. You know, it's funny because out of the unexpected things that have come from our career specifically, doing that podcast with you guys and being able to hang out and watch movies has been one of the greatest joys in our life because we really grow up off of your guys' music. Obviously, we grew up 10 minutes from you guys, but lived these different lives, and to come around to be able to like have this friendship is really, really,
thank you, brother. Appreciate
very meaningful to us. But listen,
appreciate you guys as well, man. It's been dope. Yep, we ain't going nowhere. But
no, I know. Sheik, you have to this point lived a very amazing life, and you've created music that resonates and lives on. We can't wait for this new Lox project. We can't wait to have you guys back here to watch some movies. And until then, love to you and yours, and we'll talk to you soon.
Hell yeah. Yo, my Nubian brothers, y'all stay up, man.
All right, you too.
I'm about to go hit this trail and go jog and shit. I'm trying to get diesel like y'all, man.
Yeah.
I'm out of here. Catch y'all later.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to this new episode of Waste Time with It's the Real Jeff. If you want to find out more about us, I'm Eric with the curly hair. You are Jeff with the glasses. Together, we are It's the Real. No apostrophe, no spaces. If people want to find out more about this podcast, it's called A Waste of Time with It's the Real Jeff. If people want to find out more about what's going on with us, where can they go?
You can always go to patreon.com/itsthereal to support us, keep this thing going. We are also on itsthereal.com, itsthereal.com/shop for all of our t-shirts, which were designed by me because, again, I'm very talented.
Yeah.
twitter.com/itsthereal, instagram.com/itsthereal. If you want to listen to our podcast, we are on all podcast streaming platforms, including but not limited to the one that you're listening to right now.
Yeah.
I'm talking about Spotify. I'm talking about Google. Talking about YouTube. Talking about CastBox.
You know what? Go follow us. Subscribe to youtube.com/itsthereal because we're putting up brand new cartoon animated fun clips with us and the Lox. We're talking original ones on the way. Do check those out. Enjoy them. youtube.com/itsthereal.
Yeah.
Jeff, now is the time in the podcast where we love to shout people out for whatever reasons we come up with. And I leave it to you, Jeff. Who would you like to shout out today?
I would like to shout out a couple people who signed up for our Patreon.
Love it.
I want to shout out Hasib Khan. And I want to shout out Ian Mahal.
Yes.
I also want to shout out Homer, our guy at the grocery store.
Shout out to Homer.
Who has been a constant supporter ever since he came to our... Well, even before that. He saw me on Cameron's Instagram like a million years ago. And ever since then, ever since he asked, why were you on Cameron's Instagram?
He's been a good friend.
And I just appreciate Homer every time we see him. Shout out to the West Side Market. Shout out to everybody who works there. All of our people over at West Side Market.
Yeah, shout out to Homer. Jeff, I want to shout out our good friend Emily O'Connor, who is celebrating her birthday today indoors, safely away from any big crowds, safely away from anybody not wearing a mask, safely away from anybody who is protesting the wearing of masks, safely away from any idiots, surrounded by family, surrounded by friends, and hopefully surrounded by a lot of love. Shout out to our friend down in Salt Lake City, Emily O'Connor.
Yeah, shout out to her brother Jake. Shout out to the entire O'Connor family.
Happy birthday to Emily.
Hopefully there is a birthday plan that is better than a Zoom because I hate.
It has nothing to do with you, Jeff. It's not about you. This is about Emily and her birthday.
Okay, well, Emily knows that my birthday's coming up as well. And if anybody's trying to gift me a Zoom...
Not happening.
It's not happening. I'm not showing up to any Zooms.
As always, guys, not for real, for real.
For sure.
We'll see you guys next week.
Help me ease this pain.